London shrank to a chessboard beneath us as we rose and rose. And then, turning our backs upon the evening sun, we beat slowly, steadily into the north and east, across Bedfordshire, Cambridgeshire. The Fens flat beneath us. Then, east into Norfolk, the North Sea ahead of us. Perhaps this was my fate. My Claude Butler and me to be dropped from 6,000 feet into an anonymous, but ecological grave, amid the gas rigs and terminals. But no. Well before the coast we started to drop. Amid the yellowing oceans of corn, it stood out. The green of the encroaching grass, the spirals and spokes of tarmac adam of a disused airfield. We came into land in the central apron, amid the thistles and willow herb, the grass nibbled low by the sheep and rabbits. To one side, a pile of logs and timber. Disembarked. The sky is like a huge flaming temple over us. Its girders and beams and timbers smouldering blood red as the sun dies in the west.
Is that guide rope tight?
Nice spot here, don't you think?
What's going to happen, Mr. Watson?
Where do you want your camp bed and tent, Sir Jack?
Over there. Hang my shaving mirror on the pole.
Right.
And you and Rogers can sleep on the grass here, where we build a fire. Mr. Smith will be sleeping in between you. Anderson the pilot can sleep in the cockpit, as he has in the veld so often.
Right.
Ah, look at that sunset, Mr. Smith. Warm your blood, eh? See the land about here. After the United States Air Force, I am the greatest landowner in East Anglia. Oh, in trust and mutual assurance funds, of course.
But what are we doing here, Mr. Watson?
You could run for 20 miles in any direction and still be on my land, Mr. Smith. My title, incidentally, is Sir Jack. A knight of this ancient decadent realm. In answer to your question, we are about to partake in a barbecue.
A barbecue?
Aren't you hungry? Why do you think I brought the wildebeest? Killed it myself, Mr. Smith, on the veldt. Not a week gone by. Shot it from another of my helicopters with this high-velocity rifle.
Oh, really?
I hope you like meat. Mr. Smith, red meat. Meat's so red, it's almost raw.
Well, I've only ever been a theoretical vegetarian.
It was an immense fire. A funeral pyre for the poor wildebeest. The sparks shooting hundreds of feet up into the encroaching darkness. The darkness that finally devoured us totally. And from the fire's crackling bowels was hauled the carcass of the wildebeest, hacked apart, passed round the small circle of communicants.
Taste it. Run your lips over it. So tender it almost melts in your mouth.
Yeah.
You know what I brought to England, Mr. Smith? Imported. A tiny sliver of the heart of the Dark Continent. Savagery. Look at this great blackness about our fire. The silence and vastness of the land. Africa. To lie out upon the African belt at night. And all about you hear the lions roaring and know that all that separates you from the might of their claws and great gaping mouths is a frail fire whose feeble light only flickers a few feet. And your own cunning and intelligence with your gun clutched in your hand. That is character building. Full of courage. It forges strength, superiority.
More meat, Sir Jack.
Please, please. My love. Africa, Mr. Smith. Its immensity. Its savagery. Its taste of raw power. Look at England, eh? The fat of this land. Mr. Julian Knight. Gone to seed and run to hell on nightmares of drugs and indisciplines. Nightgown, Mr. Smith. A nation of nightgown wearers and cocaine sniffers. Decadent. Worthy only of overthrow and exploitation. I am a predator, Mr. Smith. One of nature's natural aristocrats.
I recognized the style. It was one that of necessity over the last few days I'd become all too familiar with. The rant of the corporate chief. The bark of millionaire monomania.
Strange as it might seem, I, the chief executive of AFCO, a company owning the largest open-cast coal, bauxite, copper and uranium mines in the world, I too am a bit of an ecologist in my own individual way. I love the unpolluted wilderness, the unfettered freedom of wild animals.
You like shooting them?
Quite right. Don't you feel as you kill another creature that perhaps a part of its soul passes into yours? Obviously not. But we shall see, you and me. Since you have come to my notice, Mr. Smith, I must admit to having grown to admire you. Besides, you own a Claude Butler. Always a sign of natural good taste. I myself, nearly 40 years ago, the Rolls-Royce of bicycles. Must have covered most of East Africa on it. Just me, a boy. My bicycle. And those great rolling skies. You know what my favorite sport is?
Hunting?
Shooting. But a special sort. Hunting my game from helicopters. Ha! The hawk in me, you see. Normally, of course, for appearance sake, I have hunted animals, but once or twice it has been my privilege, and I do not use that word cheaply. No man feels greater honor for the hunted than the hunter. It has been my privilege to hunt men, black men. They are naturally brave, courageous beings, but they have no intelligence.
They have as much intelligence as you or me.
Ever the quicksilt. You, Andrew Smith, are a white man. You are brave and courageous like them, however much you wish to denigrate those qualities in yourself. And you are intelligent, very intelligent, a Cambridge man. Dawn is a natural time for hunting. Tomorrow morning you will mount your Claude Butler, and I shall hunt you across this airfield of mine. I swear that if you reach the perimeter fence, you shall be a free man, the journalistic hunter, and I become the hunted.
You're mad.
I suggest you get a sound night's sleep.
I didn't get a very good night's sleep, actually. Laid out on this East Anglian veldt between two watchful guards, I tended to fret. Ran my fingers over the familiar nuts, bolts and tubing of my steel steed, checking every last part. About 3 in the morning, the last embers died from our fire, the clouds cleared from the heavens, leaving me alone with the stars. Under the merciless stare of eternity, I wonder what of worth I've created in my brief life. Dribs and drabs here and there, but to that central girder and pitch of all creation, the making of a child, new life, I've contributed nothing, remained sterile, barren. Shirley and me have taken endlessly for our own wants, but for another's, from nothing I pass forth into nothingness.
Here comes the sun.
The sun was winking evilly over the horizon, like a hangman measuring his victim through the spy hole.
Right, here's your bike, son. Now remember, don't lose your pride. Give this gentleman here a good sport. A run for his money. He might be a bit potty. A right barker, in fact, but that's no cause for you not giving your best. Sticking to your standards. Keep your bottle, son. And good luck.
Thank you.
I stood by my bike. My knees knocked. To the north of the airfield, there stood scrubland and woods. Blackjack Watson would be strapped to the starboard side of the helicopter. I'd noticed his left eye was stronger than his right. The hunter and the hunted.
Anderson,
Sir Jack.
Keep the helicopter up high to start with. I want to see if he starts to show any pattern in his movements. He won't come down for the kill till later.
His knees are knocking.
Oh, don't be fooled. They'll be like steel pistons when he needs them. Self-preservation tempers all our metals. He's looking to the south a lot. That probably means he's going north.
Here comes where I ride off into the sunrise.
He's ready.
Come on, Mr. Watson, I'm waiting.
Start the helicopter.
Into the helicopter, you other two.
In the end, it's best to signal your own firing squad. At least you know when the bang's going to come.
Good luck, Mr. Smith!
Hi-o, Silver, away! Have I ever breathed clearer? Has life ever tasted fresher? Every moment savored and loved.
Keep it up! Keep it up! Let's see what he's going to do first! If he dies too soon, he'll be away, and we'll have lost him!
30 miles an hour, and she's unreeling smooth as cream beneath me. He stays well above me. I gamble with my life. Risk he won't shoot from the heights. Guess that he wants longer to play with his game. Turn to the left across his sights. Turn to the south away from the wood, suggesting a logical pattern to his intelligence. I ride the frail line of a guess. Death beneath and all about me.
Look at him! Right across my sights! He's getting towards the edge of the perimeter! In a second, up and over him! Come down, facing him, to drive him back! But first, I'll give him a couple of shots! Just to make him think I'm fooled!
He missed. I drew him. Now he's rising over me, blind for a second. Turn, turn, and back along the runway.
Where's he gone? Where's he gone? He doubled back along the runway. Don't worry. He has a mile to cover before he reaches the perimeter. We have a turbine engine thundering to burst its steel cylinder. He has only his heart, his lungs, and his two legs.
It starts to get to you. For half an hour we play, flogging up and down the main east-west strip, sometimes slipping to the south, always turning to the left, risking his final shot will not yet be made, always behaving as though the north and its scrub and wood, as though his blind side did not exist. My legs are rubber. Each separate heart thump a crack of doom. My lungs snatch and claw at nothing. If I'm going to go, it's got to be soon.
He's brave! Very brave! Getting close to the western perimeter, Sir Jack! Up and over to face him, then! Right! Where is he? He's gone! There he is! Heading north to the wood! He went on our blind side! Then get after him, then! Quick!
He's fooled us! I knew he would! Beauty of the creature. Faster. He's heading straight to the wood. Oh, is there anything more beautiful in all creation than the chase? Why must it end?
Stretching forever in front of me. The wood slipping further and further away. Keep going, keep going. Scrub starts to scud past us, the tarmac breaking upward and giving way to grass. On! On! They're after me. 200 yards, the ground coarsening and loosening. Suddenly, before me, a ditch. I rear the handlebars. Do I fly? 100 yards. Keep on! On! Where's that helicopter? Where? Hovers 50 yards before me, just above the perimeter fence, the woods of freedom stretching beyond. It squats, grinning almost in triumph. The machine has beaten man. Again. Blackjack nods his head in salute, leisurely taking aim. I watch his finger tight on the trigger. I don't care. I'm on the ground, writhing. I'm on the ground, writhing. I'm writhing. I'm...
I'm not hurt. There are no bullet holes in me. I look up. A ball of fire, the helicopter, tumbles from the sky. No one can survive. That means I kiss the earth. I lick the earth. I rub it over my face. I like the earth very much. It feels solid. Home. I am my mother's son.
Why are you chewing the earth? Andy, I asked you, why are you chewing the earth? We reporters like to know the answers to questions like that. But now he's groaning, it's all right. It's all right, you haven't been hit by any bullets. I made sure I pressed this little red button before Blackjack had a chance to pull his nasty little trigger. What a pervert, eh?
What are you doing here?
I almost wasn't here, actually. My alarm didn't go off. I nearly overslept. Jolly handy, these little things, eh?
What?
Radio transmitters. Never actually thought it would work. Placed the bomb in the helicopter yesterday as per instructions while everyone was watching Julian Knight in the swimming pool and turned up here this morning hiding among the trees to watch the fun. Waited for the right moment, pressed the button, and bang went the helicopter. Worked like a dream.
Immaculately dressed, of course.
Of course.
Wearily, I rose onto all fours, then a semblance of two. Shuffled off through the wood, Anne supporting me on one side, the bicycle on the other. In a clearing stood her Porsche, immaculate as a newborn sixpence. I dumped the bike in the boot, fell ungraciously into the passenger seat. Anne jumped neatly into the driving seat, always an agile girl, and off we ripped. Before any time had seemed to pass, we were on one of those endless motorways which these days seem to cover the country.
I suppose you want an explanation.
If you want to talk, by all means do. I'm quite happy just sitting here being alive.
First, I was a bright, bushy-tailed young reporter on Fleet Street, interviewing the rich and the famous.
Crisp and snide.
Then Nigel recruited me to work for Julian. On you.
So that's why poor old Nigel got it. Julian instructed you to bed me.
To keep an eye on you. Sort of mother you in the right direction. You, Andy, are infinitely motherable. Then Black Jack got in touch, made me an offer I couldn't refuse.
Money.
Promotion, actually. I'm being made editor of the women's pages from next month.
Oh, congratulations. I'm sure the women of Britain can feel safe in your hands. So how come you felt it necessary to blow up poor old Black Jack?
Another phone call does play an important part in our lives, the telephone, doesn't it?
By now we were doing 90 in the fast lane, the sun beating down on my beaten body, Anne's well-groomed hair flying in the wind.
Ask who phoned me.
Who phoned you?
I really don't know. Not for sure. But he sounded sweet. Made me another offer.
Fleet Street's first woman editor?
Mustn't count our chickens.
Cluck, cluck. Who was he?
He was calling Intercontinental. You know, on one of those lines that get sent through countless satellites before they come back to Earth, so he was a bit crackly, but he had a very nice voice. Texan, I think. Or maybe Australian. I can never tell the difference. He arranged for the bomb to be delivered to me and everything. I expect we'll find out who he is in the next few months. Just watch the financial pages.
Whichever international conglomerate swallows up Natural and AFCO, you mean?
Something like that. But I always find the financial papers so boring.
Oh, I don't. Anne?
Yeah?
Can I ask you a question?
Of course.
What do you suggest we do about these creatures, these great, powerful vultures that hover over our world, ruling it and manipulating it to their heart's desire, causing havoc in our lives, devouring whatever they choose?
Don't get worked up about them, Andy. Just make sure you attach yourself to a star in the ascendant, that's all. Ours is not to reason why.
I want to get out.
Pardon?
Please stop the car and let me get out.
But we're in the middle of a motorway.
You can stop on the verge. I'll carry my bike over the fields till I find a lane and then I'll make my slow, own way back to London. Stop the car.
What do you mean? We're going back to my flat for a celebration. I've got a breakfast hamper laid on from Fortnum's. Then I thought we might spend a week in Paris.
Stop the car.
Don't you like me? Look, Andrew, I saved your life. I kept my eye on you throughout this whole affair, mothered you. Is it your male pride that's been hurt? Andy, I can help you. I'm going to be a very powerful person in journalism. I'll be able to put work your way, boost your magazine circulation. We'd make a great team. Me with my thrust, you with your idealism.
From now on, I'm only going to bed with women with hairy legs.
Stop you!
The car ground to a halt on the verge. I went round to the boot and started to haul the bike out. She came back. For the first time since I'd known her, I think she was sincere.
I admire you. Really. You're an idealist. But I don't understand what battles there are you feel you've got to fight.
Warmed by an inner smugness, I cycled through the leafy back lanes of rural Essex before catching a suburban train back to inner London. By midday, I was climbing familiar steps to a familiar door.
Andy? Where have you been? Where have you... Oh!
Shirley threw herself into my arms, all her body wet with tears.
You were meant to be here on Thursday night at our special time, and you didn't turn up, and I haven't heard hide nor hair of you since.
I bathed luxuriously in this unexplained affection. What was also unexplained was Shirley's two black eyes.
Oh, lovely cornflakes, these. A Niagara of cornflakes.
Anyhow, what happened was, after you'd arrived and then your man friend...
He wasn't any friend of mine.
Deirdre went out to the front door and started, well, confronting him with his own masculine aggression.
Kicking his head in with her Doc Martens, you mean?
She is a woman, you know. She does have a right to defend herself. Anyhow, after a while, it seemed to be going on a bit long, and Deirdre had kicked him down two flights of stairs. And I felt, you know, maybe I should try to get in between. We women are non-violent, you know. So I tried to stop them. And Deirdre gave me two black eyes.
Oh, never mind.
Anyhow, what I want to say is that since this incident, I've been re-evaluating my relationship with Deirdre. And with you, and... Well, I feel that perhaps... Well, you and I might...
Yes?
Well, I thought to myself... Although babies are definitely sexist, there's no two ways about it. Babies oppress women. I also thought babies are organic. They're natural. Babies are right, Andy.
Oh, yes, Shirley. Yes.
I've been working it all out. Your role as houseperson, a rotor of housework in which the traditional stereotypes forced on women aren't... You approve of babies, do you, Andy?
Of course.
Well, then I can tell you the full truth. I've just found out. I'm pregnant.
No.
Yes!
Our two bodies are not young, strained and stretched with the years, but in a bed they fit comfortably, friendlily together. I lie through the night with Shirley's head on my arm, thinking. A lover? A child? My bike? A roof over our heads? And the greatest story of my journalistic career. The dawn breaks glorious in the east. Tower blocks in Hackney flame with light. I plan my story. As down from the skies start to flock the electronic messages and deals and data from the world's stock markets, London awakes to another day of global business. It was for me. He spoke in an Australian accent, or maybe Texan, from far, far away. He too had heard the good news, hoped I would have many more sons to my name, who would all grow up safely beneath the benign influence of global business. Recommended I concentrate in my journalism on saving the occasional whale.
Who was that? Who was that?
Perhaps catastrophe is the natural human condition, and though we spend endless energy trying to escape it, we're programmed for survival in the midst of such catastrophe. It's an odd thing, but people living precariously have more commitment to survival than people ensconced in plenty. Quote, unquote.
Who said that?
Germaine Greer.
She's a Wally. Sexist Wally. Go back to sleep.
You sure?
Of course I'm sure. Go to sleep.
But...
Go to sleep.